This is podcast number 22 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. I'm Marlene Peterson, and today we're talking lessons from ants and car manuals. I didn't get a chance to record any podcasts last week, but I'll use it as a lesson. Life happens. Last week, my husband and I spent 3 days in the car driving home cross-country. When I got home, I had a ton of things on my to-do list that needed my immediate attention, and I just couldn't pull my thoughts together to record a podcast. I felt really badly about it, but I have a feeling a lot of you didn't even notice, I hope. The world didn't come crashing down. In fact, I still have a few things on my mind that have to do with month one's topic, and here we are in month two. You know what? I'm going to record them for the next podcast. And here I am talking lessons from ants. That's a month six topic. And that's my point. There's great flexibility in this philosophy of education so that you can adjust for life and circumstances. There is no getting behind when you're learning this way. You just keep moving forward. And I'll say it one more time. The rotation schedule is your servant, not your master. It's simply a way to provide enough structure in your learning to get an overall well-rounded education. But if you get to month two and you're really excited about something you're learning in month one, by all means, don't cut it off abruptly. The objective is to create an interest in a wide variety of subjects, not hold to a rigid schedule. I've been getting a few letters from moms who are feeling a little bit of panic as they embark on this new journey of educating hearts. They're feeling a little pushback from some of their kids, a little eye rolling. They're getting pressure from family and friends with such helpful questions and concerns as, "Where's the rigor in your study? Your kids aren't going to be socialized. They're not going to learn discipline. They're going to fail their standardized tests. You're going to ruin their lives." Some moms have already put their kids back in school. They feel like their kids are out of control and they can't control them. I understand all these feelings. And if you've put your kids back in school, you're not a failure. For one thing, I don't see any school decision as permanent. Every child has individual needs and every family has unique circumstances. We have 9 children who took 9 different educational paths. My oldest daughter never homeschooled, but she has exclusively homeschooled her 5 daughters. I've mentioned before, we did it all: private school, online school, charter school, unschool, homeschool, partial school. Some of our kids went to school for a while and then came home for a while. Isn't it great that we have so many choices? My restless spirit kept me searching then and continues to keep me searching now. Some of you are feeling a little panic because your kids are in high school. I hear regrets for choices made. Remember, your influence as a mother will not end when your child is 18. My kids are still on this educational journey with me because learning lasts a lifetime, or at least it should. There is no one-size-fits-all solution to education, which is why you will never see me develop a curriculum. My primary attention is focused on you, the mother, because my purpose is to empower you. I want to do all I can to clarify your vision so that you can make your own choices and adapt them to the needs of your children. I want you to have confidence in the choices you make so that the naysayers around you won't pull you down. Fear is paralyzing, and fear is overcome with knowledge. The well-educated heart is a journey, not a destination. It's a lifestyle, a way of life. You will never arrive. This journey stretches out into the eternities. Even if you put your children back in school, you still have hearts to tend when they are home with you. So keep tending your own heart and move forward, constantly adapting and reevaluating all along the way. Sometimes we get so locked into one way of doing things, we don't recognize opportunities when they come our way. For example, for some reason, for several weeks now, I've been waking up at 2:30 in the morning and can't go back to sleep. I've been fighting it because my mind keeps telling me, "Get back to sleep. You need 7 or 8 hours of sleep. You shouldn't be waking up for a few more hours." So I count backwards and forwards to try and turn off my brain, and I toss and turn. And that's why sometimes I talk to some of you on Facebook in the middle of the night. The thing is, I'm not tired at all. If I get tired during the day, I can take a 5-minute power nap and be ready to go again. Well, this morning I got up and the thought struck me, Marlene, you've been feeling overwhelmed by all there is to do, and you keep saying, if I can just find a few more hours in the day. Well, I've been giving you a few more hours a day, and what are you doing with it? That made me laugh out loud, really, at myself for not ever thinking of it that way. So maybe circumstances are nudging you into new paths and new ways, and you're not even recognizing them for the blessings of what they are. One mom said that she's having to work more hours, and another that health reasons are keeping her from doing more for her kids. And I thought, well, that may be a blessing in disguise, because children who have to do more for themselves become more self-directed learners, which is a good thing. A mom may not have the personality to be willing to allow her children the kind of freedom necessary for self-directed learning, but circumstances are making it happen. So let me give you a pep talk. First of all, remember, if this is your first year, we're only on month 2. Lifestyle changes take time. If you're getting pushback from your kids, it's because they have not yet caught a vision of how this will benefit them. You're pitting your will against theirs. Your first job is to tend to desire. Once this is the kind of education your child wants, once your child wills it, you can step back and get out of the way. In fact, all lasting and meaningful education won't come until a child takes ownership. We're so reluctant to let go, aren't we? Your child may need a reset that comes from allowing time and space for him to feel a natural desire to learn that may have been squashed. You may have to rebuild trust. Rachel DeMille and TJ Ed calls it a detox. It could take months. And if you don't have confidence in the process, the fears and the panic are going to set in. So keep educating your own heart. I had ants on my brain the other night when I woke up at 2:30. Ants have always fascinated me. As much as those little black sugar ants annoy me, when I see them trailing through my kitchen, I'm amazed as I watch them. How does some little scout find his way into my kitchen, find a good source of sugar in my cupboard, and then go back and recruit an army to come and haul it back to their headquarters? I can brush them away, and they'll instantly regroup and reorganize and get back to business. I'm amazed at how ants build complex networks of tunnels underground, hauling out one grain of dirt at a time. I recently read how red ants will scout out a black ant colony, go in and steal their eggs, and bring them back to their own colony where they raise them as slaves. That's terrible, isn't it? But miraculous. Who taught them to do that? How do they know how to communicate, organize? How does each ant know its purpose and role in the colony? People can't even organize as efficiently or work together as cooperatively as ants do in an ant colony. Yet, look at the size of their little ant brains. If God endowed ants with such power to learn and act, what powers and gifts for learning must he have placed in his own children? I'm afraid too many educators look at children as lumps of clay, that if we don't teach them, that if we don't program something in, there's no way they can learn. The more I learn, the more I believe that we are interfering with natural learning processes built within each of us. Do you remember your first driving experience? I do. I was so excited to learn to drive. And how did I learn? I got behind the wheel in the driver's seat. The instructor told me to turn on the key. I already knew from watching my parents drive that if you pushed the right accelerator, the car would go forward, and if you put on the brake, it would stop. I had watched them put it into gear. So I did what I saw them do, and instantly, I was driving. No one had to teach me how to steer. I instinctively kept the car in the lane. In fact, my driver's ed teacher had me merging and driving on Southern California freeways the very first day. It was thrilling. And once I got my license, driving meant getting together with my friends and driving to the beach and glorious independence. Have you noticed how fat car owner manuals have gotten? We bought a new car a few months ago and the manual must be over an inch thick. How many of you have read yours cover to cover? What? You can operate your car without studying the car manual? I was glad I had it, though, when we got in our car last week and a light came on the dashboard we'd never seen before. That's when I pulled out the car manual and found the page that identified it, and we took care of it. But I got to thinking, what if before you got behind the wheel of your new car, you were required to study that entire manual page by page by page, maybe write out lists of definitions, fill in diagrams and charts from memory, give reports on what you were learning, be tested on it. Would it make you a better driver? I think that's what we've done to education and learning. We are so intent on drilling all the mechanical details of learning into our kids that we're squashing their desire to learn, when the truth is they are already divinely equipped with natural instincts to learn. Children come to us well equipped. They're not empty buckets waiting to be filled, for as Wordsworth reminds us, they come trailing clouds of glory. There is a time and place for instruction manuals, but in my opinion, they're not the first step in learning. I love this quote by Herbert Spencer I came across in an old Delphian handbook. I hope you can get past the flowery language to hear what he's saying. Who, indeed, can watch the ceaseless observation and inquiry and inference going on in a child's mind, or listen to his acute remarks on matters within the range of his faculties, without perceiving that these powers which he manifests, if brought to bear systematically upon any studies within the same range, would readily master them without help? This need for perpetual telling is the result of our stupidity, not of the child's. We drag him away from the facts in which he is interested and which he is actively assimilating of himself, put before him facts far too complex for him to understand and therefore distasteful to him. Finding that he will not voluntarily acquire these facts, we thrust them into his mind by force of threats and punishment. By thus denying the knowledge he craves and cramming him with knowledge he cannot digest, we produce a morbid state of his faculties and a consequent disgust for knowledge in general. And when, as a result, partly of the stolid indifference we have brought in and partly of still continued unfitness in its studies, the child can understand nothing without explanation and becomes a mere passive recipient of our instruction, we infer that education must necessarily be carried on thus. Having by our method induced helplessness, we straightway make the helplessness a reason for our method. Think about that. I've brought up before the miracle of speech acquisition, that a toddler can figure out how to produce sounds and the meaning behind them just by observation, that he figures out, without direct instruction from us, vocabulary, grammar and syntax, and can do it in multiple languages simultaneously. Can you imagine if we took over the job? Today, Bobby, we're going to learn to form the letter L. Now, put your tongue at the top of your mouth, just behind your top teeth. Let's practice that a few times. Next day. Today, we're going to practice pushing air out of your lungs. I need you to do that 20 times. Next day. Now we're going to put the two pieces together. I want you to push the air out of your lungs just before you put your tongue back of your teeth. Tomorrow, I'll teach you how to make a sound in the back of your throat, and by Friday, we should have mastered saying the sound of L. Are you so excited? Pretty ridiculous, right? Why do toddlers pick up vocabulary so naturally? And then when they hit school age, we think we have to take over the process and hand them vocabulary lists taken out of context and force them to write definitions and sentences, thinking that's the only way they can learn new words. Why do we think the only way a child can learn to read is by drilling letters and names, or that the only way to teach a child to write is to teach nouns and verbs and sentence structure? Why do we think we need to teach children how to think or how to be creative? Think of all the learning activities we engage our children in that we call education. Are we actually interfering with the process with which they are divinely gifted, and that just lies dormant? I can't help but wonder at the great potential that may be going to waste because of our interference. Awakening these gifts for learning is what we're trying to do. Like Pestalozzi wrote, to do away with cheap, artificial teaching tricks and entrust it to the eternal process of nature herself. What we are trying to do, few people have done before, although I find the pattern frequently when I study the lives of great men and women. It takes courage to go against the norm. Next time you doubt the process, go find some ants and consider the power of their little brains and imagine the untapped power that must be gifted within your child. The process works. In the Facebook group, I posted a TED Talk given by a woman who talked about the transformative power of literature. I'll repost it in the podcast notes. She took Shakespeare to a maximum security prison of some of society's most hardened criminals who will spend the rest of their lives in isolated prison cells without windows for the crimes they committed. These were dangerous men, murderers with hard hearts, and Shakespeare changed them. It is never too late to soften a hard heart. And once the heart is softened and warmed, learning moves forward naturally. That is the basic philosophy behind the well-educated heart. Look for stories your child can relate and connect to. Work on relationship and trust. Be mindful of individual gifts and talents. Be patient with yourself and with your children. Be a light, not a hammer. Let them watch you. And then let them get behind the wheel and drive. And now I'll close with a simple two-line poem from Robert Louis Stevenson's Child's Garden of Verses. The world is so full of a number of things, I'm sure we should all be as happy as kings. Bye-bye, see you next time.